I'd like to call this meeting of House State Affairs to order. The time is 3:20 p.m. on Tuesday, March 31st, 2026, and we're here in room 120. Please mute cell phones today. Members present include Representative Vance, Representative McCabe, Representative St. Clair, Representative Holland, Representative Himshute, Vice Chair Story, and myself, Chair Carrick. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Our record secretary is Lori Rowland today, and our moderator from the Juno LIO is Renzo Moises. Our committee aide for today is my staff, Stuart Relay. We do have three items on today's agenda, and we're going to try to expeditiously work through the first item on our agenda, as I know several members have another commitment coming up very shortly. The first item on today's agenda is House Bill 214 relating to SR22 insurance from Representative Galvin, who I know is upstairs in the Finance Committee as we speak. We have had a couple of hearings on this bill, and so we will jump right into that one first. Thank you for joining us. Brief at ease. House State Affairs is back on the record, and we will go ahead and get started. I know we've had a couple hearings on this bill, so I don't know that we need a brief reintroduction, but we will go ahead and jump right into amendments. At our hearing on Tuesday, March 24th, I set an amendment deadline for this bill for Monday, March 30th at 5 p.m., which was yesterday, and we did receive three amendments, and we will go through those at this time. So I will go ahead and start by offering amendment number one to House Bill 214 and objecting to describe it. So before you, first is amendment number one, and this just adds additional applicability and transition measures for this legislation, which was at the request of the bill sponsor. It functionally makes the act applicable to accidents occurring before, on, or after the effective date of the act, and requires insurance companies that are offering this type of insurance in Alaska to notify customers about the change of SR22 requirements within 6 months of the effective date of the bill. Are there questions from members on amendment number one? Hearing and seeing none, I'm going to remove my objection to amendment number one. Hearing and seeing no further objection, amendment number one, also known as N.3, has been adopted. And this will go ahead and bring us to amendment number two from Representative Vance. Representative Vance.
I will not be offering amendment number two.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Vance. So amendment number two will not be offered. And that brings us expeditiously here to amendment number three. Representative St. Clair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number three, N.2.
And I'll just object for discussion. Representative St. Clair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a collaboration with the bill sponsor in combining two amendments. The first part, page one, line five, following maintained, is one year. And if this, and then it goes on further to tier it just as a driver's license would. After four DUIs, you lose your license for good. After four incidents like this, you are carrying an SR22 indefinitely. So it gives a tiered approach, because we couldn't really say, you know, after 1 year, because we needed some latitude potentially if the judges wanted it, or give them guidance. on what our intent is. Because let's say that I get in an accident and this applies to me. I pay my bills off, and then I got an SR-22 for 1 year, and then 2 years later do the same thing. And then 4 years later after that, do the same thing. There has to be some point in which they are held accountable for their actions. And that's the intent of this amendment.
Thank you, Representative St. Clair. I would just note that Representative Galvin has joined us and is welcome to come up. Thanks for coming down. I know things are busy today upstairs. Is there discussion on amendment number 3? Vice Chair Story.
Thank you. Through the chair. My understanding this, I understand the intent behind this. And I just wanted to clarify, did I hear you say that? And we have the bill sponsor here right now. So this is number 3, St. Clair's amendment for more of the tiered consequences. And I was wondering how the bill sponsor felt about this.
Well, thank you, Vice Chair Story. And we were trying to strike a balance where we were ensuring that there are consequences, but the consequences weren't a lifetime for the first offense. And also ensuring that those who have time after time not met their responsibilities, that there would be more of a punitive response for that. And I think that we struck a balance there. And I wanted to respect Representative St. Clair's thoughts around this. I think it's a good amendment overall. I think that if you're moving into your fourth offense of this, it's you maybe should be taking public transportation. I'm just going to be frank about that. That said, your first time offense, you shouldn't be paying over $2,000 for life either. So for the record, I'm Elise Galvin, and I apologize. I did not start with that, Vice Chair Story. Thank you for checking in on our work together on this. I appreciate that.
Thank you for that, through the chair. Thanks.
Thank you. And I just wanted to also add, I strongly support this amendment. I'm really grateful for Representative St. Clair working on this with the bill sponsor to figure out a way to navigate this a little bit more deftly. The one thing I would say is this bill is in its first body of referral and it has a ways to go, but I think the bill sponsor might be wise if we adopt this amendment today to just look at how it may need to be slightly modified to work with the retroactivity that's in this bill. We're not addressing that in this amendment. Maybe it doesn't need to be addressed. I'm comfortable moving forward with the amendment as it is, but I just would note that this bill with the amendment that my office offered and was adopted applies retroactively, as does the underlying legislation. So just something to look into possibly. Is there any further discussion on amendment number 3? Seeing none, I'm going to remove my objection. Seeing and hearing no further objection, amendment number 3, also known as N.2, has been adopted. This brings us to the underlying legislation, House Bill, 214. Thank you. The underlying House Bill 214 as amended. Is there any final discussion on House Bill 214? Seeing none, can I get a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the House State Affairs Committee move House Bill 214, also known as 34-LS0602/M, as amended, from committee with individual recommendations, attached fiscal notes, and authorizing legal services to make any necessary technical and conforming changes.
And hearing and seeing no objection, House Bill 214, as amended, has been moved from committee. We will take a brief adjournment to sign the paperwork and allow a few of our members to attend another meeting today. At ease. House State Affairs is back on the record, and the next item on today's agenda is House Bill 41 relating to daylight savings time from Representative Allard. And I'd like to welcome Representative Allard and her staff to the committee. I'll just note as they're coming up that this is our first hearing on this bill, and this is the third of our three daylight savings time related bills that have been referred to House State Affairs. We had heard the other two on Saturday, and so it's my intention to hear this bill today and set it aside and then have some conversations with the committee about which of the bills to potentially take up for further consideration. So I'd like to just welcome you and your staff, Representative Allard, and please feel free to begin your bill overview.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And right now, it's Representative Allard, representing Eagle River, and this is my Chief of Staff, Sahar Foster. I'm having a really hard time hearing. Is it possible they can go ahead and turn up the volume? I don't have my devices today.
I'm seeing Mr. Moises back there doing that, and I'll also make sure to talk right into the mic for you. No worries.
All right. I could go ahead and start with my sponsor statement. Okay. House Bill 41 is a bill eliminating seasonal clock changes by adopting permanent daylight savings time. Establishing a consistent year-round time eliminates disruptions caused by switching clocks twice a year. This is existing data to support the elimination of seasonal time changes for health and public safety reasons. These abrupt transitions have been associated with sleep and mood issues, as well as an uptick in suicide. Additionally, it is suggested that the adoption of daylight savings time permanently can have economic benefits as well as improvements to overall quality of life. Daylight savings time maximizes usable daylight during our darkest winter months. It allows for more outdoor activities to occur after school or work in the daylight. It is better fit for the modern lifestyle since this is when most recreational activities are already occurring. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, as well as other national groups, have supported this option since more sunlight has historically reported higher retail, restaurant, and outdoor industry sales. Simply put, people tend to spend more money when there is light out and after work. Permanent daylight savings time would allow Alaska to strengthen its economy, integration with national financial systems, and improve baking efficiency. Public safety also benefits more evening light. Research shows that 50% of traffic deaths happen at night. Shifting more light into the evening hours reduces the risk during peak traffic times. Daylight also acts as a natural deterrent for crime. A study in the Journal of Quantitative Criminology found 7% drop in robberies after a shift in daylight savings time. House Bill 41 will establish permanent year-round daylight savings time that would become effective only if the United States Congress amends federal law on or about December 31st, 2023. 19 other states have also passed a resolution or enacted legislation to adopt permanent daylight savings time. While we cannot add hours to our daylight, to our darkest month, we can make it limited hours a little more usable. And we could go through our sectional if you'd like. It's pretty easy and pretty brief.
Sure, we can go ahead and do the sectional if you do, or your staff would like to walk through it.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and walk through it. So section 1, page 1, line 3 creates AS 44-12-400, article 5, standard time, changing standard time to daylight savings time. Section 2, page 1, line 12, Alaska would observe daylight savings time throughout the calendar year. Section 3, page 2, line 1, along with 19 other states, daylight savings time will observe the concurrence with the federal government. Section 4, page 2, line 3, the bill will take effect on the first Sunday in November following the following year. And I'm open to any questions that you may have, Chair, and any members of the committee.
Great. Thank you very much. And we do have public testimony noticed. Before we get to public testimony today, do we have questions from the committee for Representative Allard, Vice Chair Story, and then Representative Holland?
Thank you, Chair Carrick, and welcome Rep. Allard and her staff. When I read this bill, and I'm sorry I don't have it before me, but it seems very similar to Rep. Merrick's bill. Could you tell me the differences between them?
Right. So it is. Excuse me. Let me put the mic there. This is actually different than Representative or Senator Merrick's bill, and I could give you some of the points that make it different. Okay. So with SB 26, it moves Alaska time to Pacific time zone, then Alaska standard time to permanently. HB 41 keeps Alaska on its own time zone. 2, requires 2 steps, change time zone, revert to standard time with SB 26. With mine, it moves Alaska to daylight savings time permanently, requires only 1 step, the federal government, and allowing adopt daylight savings time. SB 26 changes time zones, requires an act of Congress or regulatory from federal DOT. Mine will also go with the Congress, but it leaves out the step with the Department of Transportation. The change will also be automatic passage with federal law. SB 26, the legislature can adopt it by permanent standard time. Mine will just move forward to either 3 or 4 hours behind the East Coast based on federal. We did find out that, do you have a copy of the bill at Congress? There is a bill that is currently being with the representative, not the representative, I think it's Congress. Thank you. So right now there is a bill in Congress. It's H.R. 139 for 2026 that I believe is going to be moving forward. Right now it's going to be, it's enacted in Senate and House Representatives, and it's called the Sunshine Protection Act of 2025.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. And we'll go now to Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you, through the chair, to the bill sponsor. Thank you. I'm sorry. I was looking at the information posted on BASIS for the bill, and you've got an article here from The Hill, Let's Lock the Clock on Standard Time. And that article seems to make a pretty compelling time for adopting standard time rather than daylight savings time. And I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that article and the argument that you're sharing with us through that article that seems like it's contradictory to HB 41. So maybe you could help me understand why it seems like there's apples and oranges here.
So I'm going to ask my chief if she wants to explain it. She has a more experience on why that we posted that onto BASIS and what were some of the avenues of why we posted it. I believe was one, to show the comparison because we wanted to be fair. But two, we're north of the equator. So the argument that we need more daylight in the morning time is kind of a moot point. What happens is in Alaska, as we all know, we're a unique bird. You either have daylight in the morning, or you're dark in the morning and dark at night. If we move it to the daylight savings time, you're going to get that extra hour in the evening where kids can go out and play, where you can walk your dog, where you can do family activities. It's got to be on one or the other. If we stay on standard time, you're going to have it dark on both sides. So I'm going to roll over Sahar. Do you want it?
I think you covered it.
What's that?
I think you covered it.
Yeah, we're good. That's okay. Thank you. We just wanted to make sure that both sides were out there, so everybody from both perspectives had a good perspective. We didn't want to try to curtail anything that was devious.
Great. Well, okay. I appreciate that through the chair. I would encourage people to read this article because I think it makes a really compelling case.
It also pertains wholeheartedly to daylight savings time. All those same points that they brought up is completely relevant to daylight savings time.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you. I think I have Representative Himshue in the queue.
Yes. Thank you. Through the chair. I'm learning a lot about this through Saturday and today. So thank you for bringing the bill. My question is, if the federal government changes this, how will they change it? If they got rid of daylight savings time, what would that mean for Alaska?
Well, you're on permanent. We're working to have it on permanent daylight savings time. So my bill coincides with the federal government. And right now there's 19 states. So the more states that are jumping on the bandwagon to do it, we would coincide with the federal government and only have one motion pass this bill. And as soon as they flip it over to daylight savings time, we would just automatically go into it the first Sunday of the following year of November.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I don't see any additional questions at this time for the bill sponsor. I just thank you, Representative Allard, for bringing forward another option here. I think it's really important to consider the variety of options before us and then to as we continue to discuss this issue, make a really informed decision. And I just appreciate you presenting the bill today. At this time, we are going to go to public testimony, and after that, we will be setting the legislation aside. So I do know there's a finance committee today, and I just, again, thank you, Representative Allard. And if you do need to go, no worries.
Okay. Are they going to do post? I'm sorry, through the chair. Are they going to do testimony on this bill today? No.
Yes.
Oh, we could stay and listen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So at this time, we are going to open public testimony on House Bill 41. And I see we do have quite a few people online. I thought we had someone in the room. Do we have anybody in the room who would like to testify on House Bill 41? Seeing none, we will go online to first Larissa Fonoff in Wasilla.
Hi, this is Larissa Fonoff in Wasilla. I don't think a lot needs to be changed. This has been a debated topic for a long time on why we even have daylight savings time. It disrupts family. It disrupts sleeping schedules, those that have little kids. It disrupts the workflow for working parents. I am in, I am in agreement that we need to get rid of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fonoff. Thanks for calling in today. And we will go now to Phyllis Mulligan in Sitka.
Yeah, hi. I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I've been kind of waiting for this a long time. I personally enjoy the daylight, and I would like to see this happen because I'm usually in bed when it's light in the morning, and I'm kind of missing that nice daylight. So I am for it, and I would like to see this changed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mulligan. Appreciate you calling in today. And we will go now to Tom Williams in Juneau.
Hi, my name is Tom Williams. I live in Juneau, and I testified last Saturday as well on SB 26, in favor of SB 26. While I am and have testified several times before on the bill to make daylight savings times permanent, and would support the effective both SB 26 and the House Bill 41, is the effect will be the same. One will get rid of the time change, and the hours will be the same. I guess the only thing that I would ask the committee to consider, they could do either one, is which one has a better chance of passing the legislature timely, and two, which one has a better chance of getting federal government timely action. Either SB 26 or House Bill 41 should be passed, and perhaps some sort of a combination where we try to thread the needle and get the federal government to act as expeditiously as possible. If Congress is not willing to take the necessary action to get permanent daylight savings times under HB 41, then I think the SB 26 is the way to go. And that concludes my testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Appreciate you calling in today. We will go to Susie Crosby in Wasilla.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity. I listened to Saturday's committee hearing on SB 26 and HB 2229 with a lot of interest. Never ceases to amaze me how the subject of time zones and daylight savings time is so misunderstood by the general public oftentimes. And at first glance, it sounds like the four bills that are in the legislature on this topic are kind of six of one and half a dozen of the other, but that hotly debated hour of daylight and where to put it is really the crux of the issue. Very strongly supportive of SB 26 and HB 41, both of which would have Alaska springing forward to DST and not going back, the equivalent of moving into Pacific Standard Time. Our spring through fall evening sunset times would remain as they are now, but we'd have later sunrises than we've been accustomed to in exchange for longer daylight on rare afternoons, which I am all for. I think that's a very fair trade, although there was a lot of testimony on Saturday that disagreed. And what I found really fascinating and noteworthy was that the SB 26 supporters tended to speak in quantifiable and documentable terms with hard numbers, reflecting the financial hit that the loss of sunlight and daylight would inflict on their businesses. We were mainly from people in the tourism industry, but I have no doubt that if representatives from many of Alaska's other summer daylight dependent industries, such as agriculture, fishing, logging, mining, and construction, had testified, they would have said the same. Losing 238 hours of evening daylight over the course of the 34 weeks of daylight savings time would really deal a harsh blow to all of them. And making up for it by putting that hour of daylight at 3:30, between 3:30 and 4:30 in the morning, really wouldn't be of any use. And meanwhile, the HB 229 supporters spoke in largely theoretical generalizations about circadian rhythm misalignment, how kids could have a hard time getting up for school. And one lady said that it would give 553,000 Alaskans more sleep. I don't know how she figures, but and how wanting to enjoy Alaska's long summer evenings would be the equivalent of smoking, skipping vaccines, and not wearing seatbelts. I really liked the, I thought the hard numbers were much more compelling. Several people commented that, well, it's just light all summer long and then it's dark all winter. But this really fails to factor in those shoulder seasons of spring and fall, which are still part of the primetime months for the warm weather industries and activities that we mentioned above. And that's where the loss of summer evening daylight would be really keenly felt under HB 229, not during the 3 weeks in late June when we have full daylight on both ends of the day. But even on our current daylight savings time fallback routine, there are still 2 months with sunrise after 10 a.m., and this would stretch to 4 months in the winter. The sunrise times by late February would be back to the same as they are in late October. But then on the positive side, the afternoon commute would be in daylight most of the winter. Only about 3 weeks in mid-December would it be dark before about 4:45. And this is speaking kind of in the Anchorage, South Central area. And also on the positive side, our descent into winter darkness and return to longer days would be gradual enough on both ends that our circadian rhythms, which are probably out of whack anyway, just by virtue of living in a far northern latitude, would adjust without the jolt of a full hour clock shift on either end. The key difference is that under HB 41, getting up at the normal clock time in the winter may feel early because of the darkness, but it's something that school kids and those in the 9-to-5 workplace routine already adapt to doing anyway. We get up at the normal time per the clock, turn on the lights, go to work, go to school, where the indoor lighting compensates for the darkness outside. And even if it's a dark early morning, remember that school is indoors and playgrounds already have night lighting. The school administrators feel that late sunrise times are detrimental to the learning process or students' mental health. School districts would absolutely have the option to bump school start times back a half an hour or an hour to better correspond with daylight hours if they so choose. However, under HB 29, anyone participating in a daylight-dependent activity, whether it's work or play, would literally have to get up an hour earlier in the summer by the clock in order to use that hour of daylight at the beginning of the day. This is impossible in many scenarios, impractical in most others, and that extra hour of light in the wee hours of the morning would essentially be wasted. I'm firmly convinced that if HB 229 were to pass, the majority of Alaskans would think it was great, right up until reality hits them in the middle of an August evening bike ride, hike, or Little League game when suddenly it's too dark to see and the activity's only half over. And at that point, I bet there'd be a lot of people screaming, what the heck, what have we done at that time? And there's also a lot of Alaskans who I've heard say, I don't care which way we go, as long as we quit switching our clocks. And this statement demonstrates just kind of a concerning lack of foresight regarding the ramifications of that decision. I feel like it's essential to consider the wording of each bill and how it would affect daily life. And I would ask you members of the legislature to take time to envision what impact each of these decisions would have on Alaskans versus the dartboard approach mentioned by one legislator in Alaska's hearing. And my single biggest priority, This is not the same as everybody else. A lot of people say, I don't care which way we go, just stop switching the clocks. Here's my feeling on it. I don't care whether we switch our clocks or we don't, as long as we don't lose our summer evening daylight. So I would ask you to please vote to support HB 41. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Crosby. Thank you for calling in again. We will have next in the queue, Wade Warrenbrock from Sterling.
Hello, Wade Warrenbrock here. I appreciate
the sponsor statement, there's a lot of compelling or good information she had as far as the reasons to consider this bill, and I appreciate you guys moving forward to passing it down to committee and bringing it to the floor. I think the daylight savings time is, as compared to standard time, has more benefit, and the last speaker said some people are just worried about the nuisance, and I'm a nuisance person, sir. I do not care to move the clocks twice a year. It's has no benefit to Alaskans, I don't think. So appreciate if you could move us out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Warrenbrock, and really appreciate you calling today. Finally, we have JP calling from Arizona.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me here. My name is Mr. J.P. First name is J.A.Y., last name is P.E.A. I'm the president of the nonprofit Safe Standard Time, working across the country on this issue. I'm also a co-chair for the Coalition for Permanent Standard Time, which includes the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine, the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, the American Association of Sleep Technologists, the American College of Chest Physicians, the National Sleep Foundation, the Society for Research on Biological Rhythms, and the Sleep Research Society. Our position is recommendation of opposing this bill, HB 41, as we recommended on Saturday, opposition to SB 26. Both bills will be worse than the status quo, and we recommend instead support for HB 229. This is a simple case of the clocks should be as closely aligned to the sun as possible for an honest keeping of the time and for a balance of morning and evening light, which can benefit sleep health, which in turn benefits safety, mental health, productivity, learning in school. There are hundreds of studies that have documented this. I generally shy away from statistics, but I heard a previous witness asking for a few. We've seen that wages decrease 3% when we are on DST versus standard time. We see that we sleep an average 19 minutes less when we're on DST versus standard time. We find that fatal car accidents can be 20% higher when we're on DST versus standard time, and on and on. There are no statistics finding an increase in exercise with DST in the United States. Statistics of crime are a bit mixed, as are statistics on economy. There are many sectors of the economy that need morning light and many that need evening light. And I would suggest that the government should not put its thumb on the scale to support one or the other and just have it balanced, aligned with standard time. On the issue of Congress and the DOT, my experience is they're not interested in this. They see it as a third rail that they prefer to avoid. There were hearings last year in both the U.S. Senate and U.S. House. There was even a vote in the Senate that failed. Senator Sullivan from Alaska was among those who voted against this. I would strongly suggest considering the bill for permanent Alaska standard time. It is the only federally guaranteed way to lock the clock, as most individuals wish to do. And that's the close of my testimony. Thanks again very much for having me.
Thank you, Mr. P. And at this time, I'll just make one more call if there's anybody in the room who would like to testify on House Bill 41. Seeing none and seeing nobody else online, this time we're going to close public testimony. And I'll just open it up one more time since our bill sponsor is here. Do we have additional questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, I just want to thank Representative Allard again for bringing this forward. Do you have any closing comments today?
I do. Thank you very much, Chair. I appreciate you guys listening to the bill. I just wanted to make a few comments. A few people were talking about SB 26 as a comparative. There's less to implement, so the bill would move quicker through the federal government. There's an extra additional step that we're not taking with HB 41, but I'd be more than happy to work with the senator on making something happen together. The other thing is the one of the testifiers had commented about putting more daylight in the morning time frame. We can't balance morning and evening light in the land of the midnight sun. That's just not possible. One of the other comments that I think is important to say is that Anchorage School District had changed against most parents' preference. They moved the school time up earlier, so the kids were going to school more in the dark to let them out so that they would have more time in the evening, and they were released from school sooner. That tells me a lot. That tells me even the school district agreed that we need our kids out in the sunshine after school to be able to play. So we could always take that into consideration when we're doing this bill. So that's all I have to say.
Great. Thank you. Again, appreciate you being here. We are going to set House Bill 41 aside for today, and we're going to move on to the last item on today's agenda. Thank you. So the last item on today's agenda today is also a first hearing of House Bill 213 from Representative Jimmy's office. And Representative Jimmy is upstairs in the Finance Committee room. And so it will be her staff presenting for us today. I'd like to welcome, looks like, Hayden.
Yes, Hayden Johnson.
Hayden Johnson, sorry. Okay. I was looking for it in my script. Staff to Representative Jimmy. I also just wanted to note for committee members that the companion legislation for this bill, Senate Bill 237, is scheduled to come over from the Senate on Wednesday. And the two bills will be meeting up here in House State Affairs. So my intention today is to hear the presentation of this bill, invited in public testimony, and then we will await the Senate bill coming to our committee after that. So I'd like to turn it over to Hayden Johnson. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. I'd like to say thank you to the State Affairs Committee members for taking the time to hear 213. So I am presenting House Bill 213, which will allow Alaskans to apply for a replacement Social Security card online. This bill will allow the DMV to share driver's license data with an approved nonprofit organization or a government or a tribal entity for identity verification. Currently, 49 states allow online replacements, and we are the last state that does not. The process of replacing a Social Security card is very difficult, especially for those living in rural areas. If you don't live in Anchorage, Fairbanks, or Juneau, you either have to travel a long way to a field office in Anchorage, Fairbanks, or Juneau, or mail in documents, which is time-consuming, expensive, and stressful. So this change will be possible because this bill creates language to allow the DMV to share the driver's license data. In 2019, we were one of the first states to allow this replacement until a legal concern that that language did not exist to allow online replacement was raised in 2021. That stopped the participation, and this bill will solve that issue. This is a no-cost implementation, and it could be operational in 4 to 6 weeks. Each year, 15,000 Alaskans need to replace their Social Security card, so that's 13,400 residents that travel to 3 Social Security Administration field offices. That is 8,898 to Anchorage, 3,318 to Fairbanks, and 1,180 to Juneau. The remaining 1,600 choose to mail in their original documents. If it is the will of the committee, I would be happy to read the sectional analysis.
Let's go ahead and do that, Mr. Johnson, if you'd like to walk us through the sectional.
Yes, of course. And just for the record, my name is Hayden Johnson. I'm staff for Representative Jimmy. So Section 1 amends AS28.05.08 to remove the reference to the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators in a ban on information sharing beyond what is mandated by the Real ID Act of 2005. Section 2 amends AS28.05.068 to convert an outright ban on data sharing with a private entity to a provision that allows them to do so only as necessary under the provision added in Section 3. And then Section 3 adds a subsection to AS28.15.151, allowing for information sharing with nonprofit entities approved by the United States Social Security Administration to facilitate driver's license data verification. And Section 4 provides that the effective date is immediate under AS01.10.070.
Great, thank you. Do we have initial questions? Actually, I'm going to retract that statement. Instead of going to questions at this time, I think let's go to our invited testifier, who is online. And we do have Dustin Brown here, who's the head of legislative affairs with the Social Security Administration, calling from Washington, D.C. So I'd like to welcome Mr. Brown, and feel free to please proceed with your invited testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Carrick and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dustin Brown. I'm the head of legislative affairs at the Social Security Administration, headquartered in Baltimore, Maryland. I've spent my 25-year career in the federal government working to improve services that government provides to the public. While I regret I cannot be here in person, it was a real honor and privilege to be able to meet many representatives, senators, and your staff during my visit to the Capitol last month. I completely agree with the comments from my colleague about the benefits that would be available to residents in the state of Alaska. About every 10 minutes, a resident comes into a Social Security office for a replacement card, which could easily be handled online. And if they don't visit in person, they must mail original documents like birth certificates to SSA, which no one wants to do. As was mentioned, Alaska is the only state that does not participate. And important to remember that there are quite a number of stories of residents who are spending hundreds of dollars and hours, if not days of time, to travel to Social Security offices to be able to get a replacement card. Importantly, this change would also enable our limited number of Social Security employees to focus on other tasks to support Alaskan residents on disability or SSI claims or retirement claims. I'm happy to answer any questions that might come up in terms of what the process actually looks like, but want to reassure everyone that this is not data that SSA or the third-party provider that is used as a nonprofit to exchange data saves. SSA does not actually receive any individual data. It just gets a simple validation that the person is who they say they are in order to be able to process the card, and then all information is removed. And we would be able to save residents of the state of Alaska significant time and money if this were to be implemented. And as my colleague mentioned, there will be no cost to implementation, and it could be operational in weeks after enactment. We stand ready to assist the committee with any questions you might have, and really appreciate the time and interest in this issue.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Brown, for your testimony. Do we have questions for the bill sponsor's office or Mr. Brown, Representative Holland?
Great. Thank you through the chair. And I'm not sure whether this goes to Mr. Brown or to the bill sponsor, but I just am seeking some clarification. And page 2 of the bill, looking at line 2, the revision to the bill is discussing communicating data to a private entity to carry out the provisions of this new section G. In section G, though, the instructions are to furnish the data to a nonprofit organization, government, or tribal entity. And I'm just trying to reconcile the private entity identified in line 2 with the instructions to only provide the information to a nonprofit or government or tribal entity that's found in new section G. So I think there's a straightforward answer, but I haven't quite been able to work it out on my own. So is there a clarification on the different way the entities that are allowed to participate in this are being described between the two sections?
I'm not sure how to answer your question directly. I can get back to you on that. I can provide more information about how we've tried to kind of tighten the scope of who is allowed to access the data. Would you like me to talk more about that?
If you think that would be helpful, that question. I'm just trying to figure out who's participating in this. It seems slightly different between the two sections, and maybe it's not, but it just seems that way to first reading.
So through the chair to Representative Holland, we've tried to make sure that the bill specifies a nonprofit organization, and that specification means that any organization that qualifies for a tax exemption under 26 USC or the Internal Revenue Code. And so that is to really to tighten the scope to make sure that the information isn't shared to a private entity. And furthermore, to talk more about the information that is shared, it's the information on your driver's license. So it's the state of issuance, your date of birth, your address, and your driver's license number. And that is just being sent to the American Administration of Motor Vehicles. And that is reading it. It's giving a yes or no answer and then sending it on to the Social Security Administration.
A follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you for that. I was almost following, but if you could go back to the comment you were making about trying to ensure that this went to a nonprofit entity with the IRS qualification, but the prior section is saying that the data just goes to a private entity. And once again, I'm just kind of trying to reconcile the line two is talking about a private entity and the new section G is talking about a nonprofit entity.
On line one, I am sorry, through the chair to Representative Holland. On line one, to read from line one to line two, it says, notwithstanding of this section, the department may not convey, distribute, or communicate data to a private entity.
Thank you. Through the chair.
Follow-up.
Yeah, follow-up. So I'm understanding that the not is being removed so that if this revision were to be implemented, reading as you did, notwithstanding A of the section, the department may convey, distribute, or communicate data to a private entity only, and there's some qualifications there. So it seems to be saying that it can send it to a private entity. But again, down in Section G, we're saying only a nonprofit entity or the government or tribal entity. So that's why I'm trying to just reconcile that. And again, if I'm stripping a gear here on parsing this out, please help me understand, or we can follow up later with the bill sponsor and sort it out. I don't mean to belabor the discussion today if it's not necessary.
No, I Representative Holland, I think these are excellent questions. I might suggest that if we can't get them answered today, we are going to be hearing the companion legislation when it comes over. And I believe it's nearly the same in its entirety. It may have addressed this issue, though.
Okay. That's fine for today.
Mr. Johnson, do you have any additional thing to add on there?
Through the chair, no, I do not. But I will try to my best to clarify this and get back to you later. So thank you for raising your concern.
You bet. Thank you.
And thanks, Representative Holland, for bringing that forward, because now that I look at that, I have the same exact question. Well, at this time, we had noticed public testimony on House Bill 213. We are going to open public testimony on House Bill 213. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on House Bill 213? Seeing no one to testify today and no one online for testimony on House Bill 213, we will go ahead and close public testimony on House Bill 213. And at this time, it's my intention to set this bill aside. Thank you again, Mr. Johnson, for jumping in, for Representative Jimmy, who I'm sure would have loved to have been able to join us today, but is preoccupied upstairs. And we understand that for sure. So that concludes all of our business today for House State Affairs. Just had a couple of notes as we adjourn today. We will have a meeting on Thursday of this week at 3:15 here in room 120. Currently, our agenda includes only first or continued hearings on legislation. I know there are some members, we will also communicate this through email as well, who are going to be absent on Thursday. And I just wanted to let members know that we are not planning to move any bills on Thursday. So if folks do have to not attend our meeting, that is okay. We will not be moving anything. The bills we will be hearing on Thursday include an introductory hearing of House Bill 188 from Representative Mina, establishing a welcoming Alaska office. A first hearing on House Bill 226 from Representative Foster on AHFC reduced interest rates. A continued discussion on Representative Hall's HB 235 on PFAS. And a first hearing from Representative St. Clair on House Bill 303 related to motor vehicle registration. With nothing else before the House State Affairs Committee, we are adjourned at 4:13 p.m.